Oh, we're not doing them in the order they're in the book, and because I'm doing them in what is thought to be chronological order. There's some not some unsureness or not exact dates on a couple of them, and that, but mostly they're in chronological order based on who they prophesy to. Okay. Okay, Obadiah. Oh, before we get to that, I have two more questions. There are 12 minor prophets, and does anybody know what three are not to Judah or Israel?
Obadiah, Jonah, and Nathan.
Good. And what three are post-exilic, post-exile? The last three.
Micah is one.
Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi. Haggai and Zechariah are both mentioned in Ezra, Nehemiah. And I don't believe Malachi is, and I'm not sure why that's considered to be post-exilic, but we'll look at the date when we get to it. Okay, to whom is Obadiah writing? Who is he prophesying to?
Edom.
And what are we, who is Edom anyway?
Esau.
Esau, the descendants of Esau. The date is uncertain, like I already said. And what do we know about the relationship between Edom and Israel?
They're brothers.
They're brothers, right. They go way back.
They even fought in the womb.
They what?
They fought within the womb.
Yes, they did. Their antipathy goes way, way, way back, doesn't it?
They were always enemies.
Always enemies, and why?
Because Esau felt like Jacob stole his
birthright. Okay, he did trick him out of it, yes. And?
And the blessing.
And the blessing. Okay. What else? What happened after they were grown and Esau went off and began living in the Edom area?
God chose Jacob again and the 12 sons and through that the Messiah would come.
Mm-hmm. What about when Moses and the Israelites were coming through the wilderness and trying to get to Canaan? They would not let them pass. But what happened a good while later when Jacob and his family and all his livestock and stuff came through?
They welcomed?
Yes. Yes. Actually, I got those backwards. Yes, this was first. No. Hang on.
Moses is first.
Yes, okay. He Jacob was before Moses. Moses is Numbers.
That's true.
Okay. But and so I should have done that the other way around. When Esau was still alive and Jacob was coming through there, they made up and Jacob brought him gifts and Esau welcomed him with open arms and so on. But after that, on down the stream of time, when Moses and the hundreds of thousands of Israelites came through, they would not let them through. So I don't even know if it says where they went around, but they had to go around Edom, or probably they did. We know we didn't go up the west side of the Jordan, but they probably had to go all the way around Edom. I don't think there is a way between Edom and the Dead Sea, ma'am.
They went down the wilderness.
Okay, went down and around. Okay, so way out of their way. Okay, so what did y'all put for the first nine verses in an outline? And I didn't do outlines on all the books, so don't freak out over this.
Destruction of the nation.
Judgment of the nation, and it says why in those verses? Verse 3. Which is kind of... Well, never mind, we'll talk about that on the next question. All right, verse 10 to 16.
Why they were being judged.
Okay, I did too, but then I answered it again. Well, okay, well, tell us why they were being judged in the first section.
In the first section?
Mm-hmm.
Because of their arrogance.
Okay, pride, arrogance. And then 10 to 16, judgment's coming because of...
They were just heartless. Yeah, they wanted harm no matter where they came from.
But specifically toward who?
Jews.
Yeah, their brother. Okay. And then 17 to 21 is just kind of a wrap up. The kingdom will be the Lord's, which is the very last phrase in the book. It's just kind of a summary. Did y'all put anything different than that?
Israel's exaltation.
Okay, excellent. And we already covered two basic reasons for Israel's impending doom, verse 3 through 5, pride, and verse 10, the violence against their brother Jacob. Now, what did they do that showed their pride? How was their pride made manifest? And, well, we'll talk, let's do that first. In verse 3 and 4.
Well, they were up on an eagle's nest where their defense was, and they felt like they couldn't be attacked.
Right. They thought they were, who can bring me down?
Right.
You know, I'm way up here, and I'm impenetrable, and, you know, because I'm me, I'm cool. And, but, though, what does the next phrase say? Though, what does God say? Though you fly as high as an eagle and put your nest among the stars, what?
Then he will bring you down.
He will bring them down. I don't know if they listened to this. I don't think we have anything anywhere else in the Bible about how Edom responded to this. I think they just ended up getting destroyed, most likely. But let's look at some of the specific charges in the next several verses, starting verse 11. What have y'all got?
They cast lots for Jerusalem.
They what?
They cast lots.
For Jerusalem, is that what you said? Yes. What verse is that in?
11.
I
put verse 10. I put verse 10 for violence to your brother.
Right. But that, to me, that's oh, you're right. That's one of the things that they that's the umbrella of the whole thing.
It didn't help when strangers came.
Right. That's one of the things I have listed. They stood and watched them when they were in captivity. They just let it happen. That's in verse 12. And they not only that, but they rejoiced over it. They spoke proudly about it. What does 13 say?
They took their wealth. They looted.
Right. They just gazed on their affliction. They just let them get looted. They looted them. They stood by and watched it happen. And 14, this to me is especially vile. Not only did they just stand and watch, what did they do?
They imprisoned the survivors.
Right. They cut off their escape route and imprisoned the survivors. They didn't just stand and watch, which is bad enough, but they actually added to their affliction and their suffering and their destruction, and they were proud of it. And I guess that goes along with setting themselves up high on the mountains, that, you know, we're better than you, and we're just going to stand, you know, you don't deserve to be saved, even though you're our brother. So, I know what, I bet this question was the problem. Mount Seir?
That was, yeah.
Okay. That took a little bit of research on my part, too. Mount Seir is a mountain in Edom, and it is used to stand, and I'm using it to stand for Edom. I should have, this is kind of weird, I guess. Did anybody understand what I was talking about?
Is Mount Seir in the text somewhere?
No.
Okay. No. But if you go back to Joshua 24:4, it talks about them go. It talks about it. It's in Genesis.
It's in Genesis 36:8.
Yes. And it's again in, there's another one. But Joshua 24:4 is the one that I read.
Right. You had to do a bit of research. Genesis 36:8 said, "So Esau dwelt in Mount Seir. Esau is Edom." So the reason I use that is because it's comparing mountain to mountain. And it doesn't say that here, but because it talks about the mountains of Esau, I just was looking that up and found, you know, I was just see if there was anything specific, because he does talk about Mount Zion in verse 21. So,
when it explains like the house of Jacob and the house of Esau, that just kind of helps explain what Mount Seir and Mount Edom are.
I agree. Right. So, how did you how do we contrast those in 17 to 21? Specifics.
For Mount Zion, after people will escape, they're called holy, they will possess Edom's possessions, and they will be a blazing fire to make stubble.
Excellent. And who's the stubble? Mount Seir or Edom. No survivors. Let me see, where did I get that? Mount Seir, no survivors remain. So the captives who are in Seir shall possess the Savior to judge the mountain.
Judge.
There we go. Verse 18. No survivors shall remain of the house of Esau. They were devoured. They shall be possessed by the south and by the children of Israel. They are judged by the saviors. Anyway, just more talk about how they're completely destroyed and taken. Completely wiped out because of something that happened. Well, like I said, we don't know the date of this. It is quoted in Jeremiah 49. I have a note of that in my Bible. So sometime before Jeremiah, enough years have passed that Edom should have gotten over their problem. And how do you think Edom still has a problem in this day and age? How has that been passed down to them, these people? Is Esau still alive?
No.
It's like what God wanted his people to do was passed down from children to grandchildren and so on and so on, his law and the way he wanted his people to follow him. And it worked in Edom for some reason, because their bitterness and anger and hatred of Israel survived and never died. And it destroys them. They are destroyed because of it.
Well,
let's see that
today. And
then
fighting.
Ma'am? Well, yes, they are still fighting, aren't they? I guess that's the Arabs, huh? Or whatever's left over there. Yep. So, what is going to happen to Edom on the day of the Lord? Look at 15.
Have they done everything
to
them?
Right. They have been, that's enough to make us think right there about, how we act is going to easily turn around and come back on us. So that way they've acted is coming right back to them. And what is the certainty that's given that Obadiah's prophecy is going to come about? Verse 1, 4, 8, and 18. What is in this, repeated in this chapter or this book, that makes this very certain to us?
Thus says the Lord.
It's not something that Obadiah is making up. It's prophecy straight from the Lord, and they can just have no doubt about it. It's going to happen.
Also, it talks about in verse 31, the kingdom to be the Lord's. There is nothing that's going to stop the Lord from establishing his kingdom as he had planned before the foundation of the world.
Right.
And so, it's not even Israel, not even Babylon,
which is going to come in and really tear up Israel, and Edom too. That God uses.
So, nothing is going to stop the coming of the Messiah and the King.
Right. Now, the Day of the Lord phrase is used more in Joel. It's only used once here in this book, and I didn't give you any where to find the answer to this. In fact, this is first what I thought of, Joanne, that you're talking about. But what does that signify in the Old Testament?
Judgment.
Coming judgment. And what do we base that on? How do we know that? How is it always used?
Yeah.
It's always used about coming judgment, punishment, destruction. Is it ever used in the Old Testament about Jesus coming or the end of time?
No,
a lot of people think that, and a lot of people use Old Testament prophecy and they try to apply it and attach it to modern day events. A specific example comes to mind about the promises to Israel in the first five books of the Bible that come about in Joshua, the land promised. People in Israel today believe that God promised that land to them and that it belongs to them, and they deserve it and get to live there. But in truth, what happened?
So the religious world today believes
that. Yeah, not just the Jews. You're right. The whole world believes that.
That's why they're always trying to save Israel.
I know. Okay, so, but what did they do in actuality, the people in Israel, or their forebears? Okay. How did Israel get started? The country. Has it always been there?
No.
God brought them out of Egypt and gave them
No. Modern day Israel.
Oh, modern day
yes.
Israel.
They started in the 40s.
After what?
After the war.
Right. This is where the Jews who were being persecuted fled and started their own country. And who did they take that land from?
The
same people they took it from the first time. But they're basing their right to do that on biblical stuff, which already happened. And I guess we're probably just in a minority because we don't believe that. I mean, I'm not about to go over there and try to take it away from them, and I'm not going to fuss about the government doing whatever they do, but in actuality, they took it. Although it was the promised land to begin with. Maybe God wanted them to take it. I don't know. But I don't know if that war's ever going to quit, I guess, is my point. Because they both think it's their land.
I don't know of any promises God made to them that it would be theirs in perpetuity.
That's true.
If you go back to the land, if they forget about the if, then they've done none of the ifs.
Right.
And the Israelites today did not cross. That he's the son of God. They're still waiting for him. And so, I don't know where we...
Right, the Jews shouldn't be a nation anymore.
No more than some of the other people who lost their nations just because they were given that land at one point for a purpose. And that's why they destroyed... They can no longer be the nation that they were then because they have no records. You cannot be a priest. And I don't know who's their priests. I don't think they don't have...
They have no way of knowing what tribe they're in?
You have to be able to prove your lineage straight back.
Yeah, the priest for sure.
Yeah.
But any of the people, no, but none of the people, they have no land rights.
As God is concerned, though, now, if they feel like they own it civilly, that's another thing. I don't know. You know, the Arabs came and took it. They took it from the Arabs took it back from them, and now they're trying to get it back from the Arabs. So that's going to be, I think, as long as the world stands, because they're...
Well, and they're not the only ones like that. You know, the Irish and the English are, you know, fought for years, and then you know, in Iran and or Iraq, I mean, and all the, you know, the Middle East and other places.
You talked to Andre's mother. She was born in
Morocco.
Yeah, but whatever country, that's a different country. It was French when she was born
right
there, and the Arabs have taken it over. She hates Arabs because they took her country over. So it's not the Israel's not the only one that's had a country taken away.
Oh no! Oh my goodness. No.
I'm not a great history about
look
that.
Look at Ukraine. They're trying to... Russia's trying to take them over now.
Yeah.
Look at America.
Yeah. I mean...
My great-grandfather lost his place. He's an American Indian. He lost his
place. Yeah. The Indians got... And look about the Aborigines in Australia. You know, they were kind of scooted over to the edge. And Japan has been very warlike. And it's very historical.
I had many Jewish friends when I lived in New Jersey, and only one kept the Feast of the Tabernacles. The rest of them, they went to synagogues or tabernacle. You know, they went to tabernacle, the synagogue. They went to synagogue. They kept the three high holy days, and that was it. There was no way to keep the law of Moses. They didn't even pretend to keep the law of Moses, you know, and they were Jew by
birth.
Like birth.
But
and
like almost, not really a nationality, but a race almost, I guess. I'm not sure what it would be called.
And I mean, one family did the Bar Mitzvah, but they still did that, you know.
Where is that in the Bible?
It's not. But that's what they did, you know what I mean? And all of the things.
Hey, I have a great niece-in-law. No, a niece-in-law who is a Messianic Jew. And she believes in Jesus, but nothing else in the New Testament. And they go by the Torah. But when you ask her why she doesn't do sacrifices, she does, what's the Christmas? Hanukkah. They do Hanukkah, not Christmas. Which is not in the Bible either. But she can't answer any questions. She said, you'd have to ask my mom. She just does it because her mother's one. And she's raising her girls that way. It's ridiculous. You can't talk to somebody that doesn't know anything about what they're doing. They don't have any answers. Even if she did know what they were doing, she wouldn't have any answers because she can't find it in the Bible. But you're right. The people who are Jews today that don't follow the Pentateuch, you know, or the law, I don't get it. I don't know how they can hold their head up and say I'm a Jew when they don't do what God told the Jews to do.
Well, you mentioned them being a race. They're a mixed race.
Well, true.
There's no pure Jewish race people.
That's true.
And to God, that was very important. That's why he did not let them intermarry. And so that was one of the very most stringent laws.
Yeah, it was. Okay, let's talk about the pride. Let's look at Proverbs 16:8. So, Joanne, did you find Mount Seir? Did you have to do Google to find it, or did you just look in the Bible?
Well, I was avoiding Google. I had pulled out a commentary, and I couldn't find it.
Do you have a concordance or sometimes if you, you know, I have a thing in the back of my Bible that, I mean, there's words that you can find Bibles in, and there's words that have, that list all the other places that where the words are.
I didn't see it in my
Bible. Really? Okay.
But in Joshua 24:4 was like the best representation I found, because it says Isaac I give Jacob and Esau I give Mount Seir to possess it, but Jacob and his sons without Esau.
Okay, well, did you write that Genesis verse that I gave you down?
Yes.
36:8, because that was very specific.
And so I didn't know that way, because that comes up in the diagram.
Okay, and you know what? Does anybody here think it's wrong to Google something? Sometimes I have a phrase in my head and I can't think of the rest of the verse and I can't think where it is. I'll type that into Google and it'll tell me where it is. You can type in a phrase on your Bible app?
Yeah.
Which one do you
You have one word.
Yeah.
And you know what book it's in, or if you don't, if it's in the whole Bible, it'll say.
I need to get eSword. I use
You have to pay for the I think there's 4 or 5 versions, you have to pay a few dollars in order to get them added.
What is that? I didn't
remember. eSword.
eSword.
Yeah, yeah, sword like.
Oh, okay.
E-Sword.
I'm going to know. If you've got me all set up on it, my iPad wasn't charged. I couldn't use it, but I got the tisk, I bet you could have, because Mark loves E-Sword when he's doing class stuff.
Yeah.
Like the parallel.
I had no idea that there was a Bible app that you could do that on. Okay. I need to get with the program. I can't think of the name of mine right now, but I use it a lot. I like reading my Bible on my phone. I don't know why I'm able to stay awake better. And I can scroll. You know, I have to be doing something. Maybe that's it. I don't know. Okay, Proverbs 16:18. Melissa, will you read that, please?
Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit is more stumbling.
Okay, and then let's look at 29:23 also. Pat, will you read that one, please?
A man's pride will bring him low, but a humble spirit will obtain honor.
Okay, so pride blinds us to our weaknesses and our mistakes. You know, it makes us also, it causes envy of others' good fortune. If we think that we deserve that more than they do, or at least as much as they do, that is pride. So we need to be happy for other people's good fortune and get the pride out of our hearts. I mean, we're always aware of seeing, you know, the bad stuff about ourselves, and pride, you know, it'll blind us. What else y'all want to say about pride? Anything?
Well, in Obadiah, all of that takes place, you know, falling and bringing low. You know,
God's going to bring them down.
I know. Will the wise men be destroyed? The mighty men will be dismayed, you know? Verse 10, they are caught to be shame. Verse 15, as you did it, it will be done to you. I mean, you're going to be destroyed, just like they did. And in verse 16, other nations will devour you, and you will be as though you never existed. So, you know, your pride.
Right, and verse 15 also says, Linda, that the day of the Lord is coming upon other nations too. This is not just about Edom. They're not the only nation that's disobedient and prideful and violent toward their brother. I mean, there are other nations that have judgment coming, as we're going to see as we go onward. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Were you finished?
Okay.
All right, now let's talk about our men.
One thing I think about, whose fault is it? Jacob and Esau had this problem because Esau felt like that Jacob had done him wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say he didn't take advantage, but if you have something that's precious to you and you just give it away, whose fault is it really?
You're talking about the birthright now.
Right.
Yeah, and that's nobody's fault but his.
And he's, you know, there's no way you're going to starve to death before you can cook you something to eat.
Yeah, that was
But he was, it says he did not, how did it put it, he didn't treasure it, or he didn't, God called, he just thought it was a vain thing. He wasn't interested in it.
Okay, but about the blessing.
Well, the blessing.
He definitely got tricked out of that.
That's true. But God.
But there was a reason for that. God said from their birth.
God sometimes uses evil to allow good to come. Mm-hmm. And he knew from the beginning, it was said, before they were ever born, that the older will serve
the younger.
And so we read that, we think, now how's all that going to work out if you don't know the rest of the story? And.
Yeah, go all the way back to Joseph, who was not the oldest, not even the one that the Messiah was going to come through. And the same with David. He wasn't the oldest son. He was the youngest. Joseph wasn't the youngest. Benjamin was, but I think David was the youngest. You know, and as God said there, you know, all his brothers were warriors. He's out tending the sheep. He's not even grown all the way up yet. You know, God doesn't always look at the outside; He looks at the inside, and which is the case with Jacob and Esau.
My point
sure.
about that is sometimes we get mad at people.
Is that my phone? This is ringing. It's ringing. That is not my phone. My phone is off. My phone is turned off.
I thought we heard anything.
I didn't hear.
Oh, it's in my hearing aids. But it's turned off. Why is it ringing? I kept thinking it was in this post. I'm so sorry, y'all. Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry. That's embarrassing. So I guess it rings in your hearing aid. See, they're Bluetooth. And so it rings even if it's turned off.
Oh,
all right, yeah, or leave the phone in the car, maybe. All right, where were we?
But anyway, sometimes my problem was with Jacob and with Esau and his being, he was mad at Jacob, but it was really himself he should be mad at. And sometimes we do the same thing. Our pride gets in the way, and it can't be our fault for the man we're in. And so we look for someone else to blame rather than examining and saying, what did I do wrong in this? What can I do to fix this? Because I'm the root cause of the problem, rather than blaming someone else.
Or even if I'm not the root cause, I could definitely be part of the problem. You know, that's I'm reminded of a relationship in my family that's a little bit turbulent right now, and it has a lot of it is pride, and I, you know, until they figure that out, I don't know if they're going to get anywhere toward resolving it. So, all right, let's look at let's talk about attitude toward your brother, Philippians 2:2-3. These things are so applicable to us. I mean, obviously, Obadiah is not the only place in the Bible, in the Old Testament or the New, that mentions these things. Linda, will you read chapter 2, 2 and 3, please?
Make my joy complete by being of the same mind, maintaining the same love, united in spirit, intent on one purpose. Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourself.
You know, if we can't put our brother above ourselves, whether we want to or not, then we have an attitude problem. Because what did Jesus do? If you read on down there, to have this mind which is in Jesus, who did not consider it robbery to be equal with God, but he made himself nobody. He took the form of a bondservant, became as a man. He humbled himself and became obedient. He completely emptied himself of his glory and came to earth as a man to serve mankind. And if we can't have that the attitude or the mindset that if we need to put our brethren above ourselves and even other people, if we we shouldn't confine this to our brethren, our members of the church, or, you know, people we're close to even. Other people that you're standing in line with, you know, don't cut in front line in front. Don't cut in line in front of someone.
Especially when driving.
Yeah, think about driving. That, you know, I get so irritated sometimes with people who, you know, there's an exit lane, and people go zoom, and there's a line, and people go zoom up the front and cut in, and I'm like, I guess you're more important than the rest of us who can wait in our turn. And I think it's getting worse, and I think it's going to continue to get worse because of the way our society is raising our children to, it's not your fault. I'll fix it for you.
Selfish.
Yeah, it's a very selfish society, and you know, it's not what we see. Unselfish is not what we see on a daily basis, generally. But we can do our part to make it better. Let's look at 1 John 3, 14 to 16. Joanne, will you read that, please?
14 through 16. Okay. Now that we have passed out of death into life, because we love the brethren, he who does not love abides in death. Everyone who hates his brother is a murderer, and you know that no murderer has eternal life abiding in him. We know love by this, that he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren.
Okay, very clear here. And also in chapter 4, verse 20 and 21, the love of our brethren is crucial to our relationship with God. Chapter 4, verse 20 says, if anyone says, I love God and hates his brother, he's a liar. For he who doesn't love his brother, whom he has seen, how can he love God who he has not seen? This commandment we have from him, he who loves God must love his brother. So love in this instance is what kind of love? Care, the kind of love that cares about the welfare of our brother, not mushy, gushy, affectionate family or romantic, any of those loves. It's the kind that cares about them because they are a brother or because they're another being created by God. And it's important to God as I am, that kind of thing.
Says there also, Lauren, in 1 John 3:18, let us love with word. Let us not love in word or in tongue, but in deed and truth. Genuine, looking after one another, doing for one another, not just saying, I love you, and then ignore the need that they may have, or ignore, you know, the suffering they're going, or ignore the struggle that they may have in their life. That you can't go to them in love, genuine love and truth, you know, to help them.
Right.
This also is about this here too.
Right.
I have a thought question. Dealing with people who have an arrogance problem, is there a proper time to, or an improper time, depending on how you look at it, to talk to somebody who has that specific issue? Is it better to show by example, but...
Sometimes they don't get it if you're showing by example.
I don't know how to form the question that I had in my head. You know, I mean, is it better to keep your mouth shut and to be the example to that person?
Okay, just right there. Sometimes you can be an example all day long, and they still don't get it, because a person that has that problem generally, I don't think they even realize it about themselves a lot of the time. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, that's true. Sometimes they do. I have one person in particular in mind at one time talked to me, and they said, "I know that I can't." No, they called to talk to me about something else, and then. In the past, and I pretty much told them, you know, you ask, you're going to get what you need. I told them, just because you have an opinion doesn't mean it's always right. And so they called me again later and said, I'm going to ask you this question because I know what you told me last time, and maybe I got the same problem. They have it, and they don't, sometimes they recognize it, but they don't know if that's what their problem is right now or if it's something they really need to get their teeth into, you know. And so I think we need to help people. We need to do it out of love and in a time when it's not, okay, shut your mouth because you're talking faster than your brain can work. That's what you feel like doing sometimes. Even to myself, I think of myself, my tongue was working faster than my brain today. And I wish somebody would just tell me, hold on, slow down. Stop a minute. Think what you're saying. But we do need to talk to them just because of, we're to be an example. But is that the case in everything? We know our brother's living a life of immorality. Well, I'm just going to show them by my example. Well, that's not going to work. They need to be told what their problem
is. I feel like pride is one of those things, though, that it's harder to pinpoint the life of immorality. Like, I can come on my side, look at somebody else and go, your problem is pride. But is that really the problem? I mean, that may be my assessment of the situation. You know what I mean? Like, to me, pride is one of those things that, I don't know.
It is hard. But sometimes we just have to say, you know, I may be wrong, and you kind of help me with this. But it seems like your opinion and what you think about this is taking the precedent initiative. Show me in the scripture. Take me to the Bible and give me a specific verse. And you may, she may, or they may. And you can say, okay, what about this verse? Or let me think about that and I'll talk to you about it. But we do think out of love. Don't do it in the heat of the argument.
Anybody else want to comment on that?
2 Timothy, the 3rd chapter, Paul deals with how people are going to be in the latter days, and he gives the answer to how to deal with it. In 2 Timothy 3, he's talking, of course, to a gospel preacher, and at Ephesus, realize that in the last days, difficult times will come. Men will be lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, reviled, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unhopeful, unloving, so forth and so on, without self-control. And he goes all the way down. He talks about all that. Now you follow my teaching, conduct, purpose, faith, patience, love, and perseverance. Well, there you go. With patience and love and perseverance. Then you go down to get into scripture, inspired by God. Profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, for training in righteousness. That's the only thing we can show. That's the only way it is love, patience, all this. Because
okay, but if you say you read that to them, and how are you going to convince them that they have that problem?
That is instruction for me, and then
of how
it is of how to handle and what to use. You don't use I think so's and it seems to me, or you know, but have your ducks in a row with your patients and that kind of thing. Instances you have to bring up how that had come across to you. You know, if you're going to talk to somebody about something, you've got to tell them what
specific instances.
What it is.
Well, and I would add to that, if you can do that, if you can come up with specific instances, you might suggest that they ask someone else, that they trust their judgment. If they're coming across that way to them, that way they don't have to just rely on you. And I mean, I would suggest they ask someone else that they, if they have, they think they have that problem. Especially if they're listening to you. If they're getting all bent out of shape and worked up, that might not work. I don't know, but you can't go around asking somebody else if you think they think that, because then that kind of be gossipy. But I think that would work if you told the person you thought of it. Maybe you should just ask someone else's opinion on it. Anybody else?
The problem with that is that people don't have the guts to tell them that
that's true.
You.
That's true.
It makes that make the other. I mean, I'm not saying that's right.
I know. Well, they definitely should ask somebody that they know has the guts to tell them, but they may not want to hear it, so they may ask the wrong people. I don't know. It's a sticky deal.
Well, we tend to have trouble admitting our own faults. I mean, I can sit in the pew on a Sunday and feel like she's preaching right at me. Like, again, it hurts. It doesn't feel good. Then there are others who can be like, oh, well, I know they have the same problem as I do, or they've gone through something similar. So I'm like, this is hitting me in the field, like it should be, you know, and you talk to them about it and they're kind of aloof of it, and I'm like, okay, you know.
Well, you know, and everybody's different. You know, when we're here in worship, say you hear something that's hitting you. Somebody else may be dealing with a sick kid, you know, or a wiggly kid, or not feeling good, nodding off, or, you know, you never know who has heard exactly what you've heard, or how you've heard it, or when you've heard it, you know. Like, sometimes at lunch, somebody will say something about the sermon, I'm like, he said that? How did I miss that? You know, my Bible's open on my lap. I'm following along. But sometimes you just, you blank out on something, or you catch the first part of something and miss the last part, or somebody around you's making a bunch of racket or coughs or something. So, that you can't rely on that always. You know, I would say that you feel like it's applying to you, then apply it and use it. Which I think you do.
Well, that's very true. We all have to apply it to ourselves. But there are people that, Steve being over and working with people, that they'll preach a sermon and somebody will come out and say, well, Brother So-and-so would have been here back this morning. That would have been a good sermon for them. And it's the exact same problem there the elders are dealing with them.
Oh, my goodness.
So,
oh, my goodness.
That's
why the elders are dealing with them.
You know, I wish Ennis was hearing this lesson. And then I got to think, well, hey, I'm the one that's supposed to be listening and applying it. So,
yeah.
We all done that.
We all do it.
My grandchildren or my children when they were growing up, you know, man, I wish that, you know, we never lost.
And I hope my kids in my class are listening to this lesson because we just went over
this. Yeah. I think the same thing. Man, we just talked about that this morning. I hope they're hearing this. Okay, anything else? We will do, Joel next time.